Welcome back to 770 CHQR and More Than Money. And we've been joined by Peter Zion. He's the geopolitical analyst that we've had on multiple times to our show. And this is a great conversation to have. One part that he has written and put out is called The End of Russian Finance. And I'm really interested in this, Peter. Tell us more about what you're seeing and how this whole thing got, how you put this basically on paper for the world to see when you talk about the end of Russian finance.
The Russian system has now under greater sanction than all other countries in human history, all sanctions combined. Just the degree to this, and there's more coming. I mean, we haven't even started to sanction the energy sector in a very serious way. That's coming. The most impressive and unexpected step was the full sanctioning of the Russian Central Bank. So the Central Bank now is barred from engaging in any sort of transfer of any funds in Swiss francs, Korean won, Japanese yen, European euros, Canadian dollars, American dollars, Australian dollars, and I'm sure I left out a few big ones in there. So they went from having over $500 million in reserves to nothing almost overnight. The only currencies that the Russian system can still tap are the ones that were in the country, which are obviously useless for international transactions. And what is in the country is split between gold and Chinese yuan, which is not even the Chinese yuan. So we're in this weird situation now that if the Russians want to buy stuff on the international market, they have to send a plane full of gold to pay for it. Now, that can be done. The Iranians have done that, but it's never happened on this sort of scale. I mean, this is the 11th or 12th largest economy in the world based on who's doing the math. And to have a gold payment system, it's like going back to the 1700s. So in this sort of environment, even if the Russians thought it was okay, wanted to pay their Western creditors, they no longer have the capacity. So we're going to be looking at a series of rolling defaults. I'd actually argue they're already in technical default because they've already said that they're only going to pay on their bonds in rubles. And April 15 is kind of the magical date when we're past the 30-day grace period and they go into full default. And I see every single Russian government-linked bond at every single level, municipal, provincial, state, state-owned company, all of them are going to zero.
So what happens if that was to occur? Like from our perspective, being Canadian, being American, it's, yeah, okay, that's happening over there. What's the impact if a country like this goes through a complete collapse financially?
Well, let me give you a midterm and a long term. So on the midterm, every Russian company, especially the bigger ones that are responsible for resource production, are heavily dependent upon bonds in order to get the investment in to maintain production. So we're looking at the broad scale collapse of the Russian extraction sector. And so that means that anything the Russians do export, even without new sanctions, we are looking at a collapse in their productive capacity. So that's platinum, that's palladium, that's coal, that's timber, that's oil, that's natural gas, that's aluminum. All of this stuff is looking at chronic problems in the midterm. A little bit longer term, we know from the experience of the Asian financial crisis that finance is interconnected in ways that we can't predict. So in 1997, when a bunch of Thai property developers and currency players realized that they had overbid, they started pulling their money out of the system and getting it out of Thailand. And within 6 months, we had similar runs in places like Indonesia and Malaysia. It ultimately went to Korea and Russia and Brazil. So when you look at emerging market funds, Russia is a component in all of them. And now we're looking at breakdowns in Russian oil exports, which is going to generate price pressures in most developing markets. So we get a second order effect that is going to pollute a lot of these indexes anyway. So until the financial sector finds a way to hive these developing markets into separate buckets, so, you know, Brazil's a very different economy from Russia, is a very different economy from Malaysia. Until we can find a way to split that based on actual risk and economic performance and above all geopolitical impacts, we're looking at the entire financial sector just going into tailspin after tailspin, because we now have first and second order problems wound into most of our investment products. And there is no way to hive that out except for just liquidating anything in emerging markets overall. So we first get an emerging market financial crash, and then we have to figure out how to rebuild. We will not do that in a year.
I we're all past the pumps in the morning, right? And locally in Calgary, we're obviously tied to the energy sector specifically. Can you kind of give us your viewpoint on how this would affect the global energy sector and how it would affect Calgary in general too?
Sure. So it's good and then it's, or I'm sorry, it's bad and then it's good and then it's bad again is the short answer. The Russian system exports about 2/3 of its output to the West, primarily to the Black and the Baltic Sea. Right now, loadings are complicated on the Black Sea because insurance companies are not allowing ships to go in. So anyone who is going is going to have some sort of sovereign indemnification. In addition, ship captains, especially from Western countries, are refusing to go, and dock workers in the West are refusing to unload Russian cargoes. In addition, both the Black and the Baltic Sea ports for the Russians are very shallow. They can't take super tankers. So we're looking right now at maybe a 3 million barrel per day block in the Russian system where they just can't get it out. And the longer that holds, the more they fill up their storage, the more the pressure builds up all the way back to the wellhead. Once that happens, they just have to shut in production. And in Russia, because the pipes are so long, because the weather is so harsh, and because the operating conditions in Siberia are so difficult, once that happens, once it's shut in for at least a decade. So we're looking at somewhere between 4 and 5 million barrels a day of Russian crude that's likely to fall off the market. And that's the largest disruption ever. I mean, that's more than when Venezuela and Iraq went offline at the same time in 2003. And it's not coming back. You know, Iraq eventually came back. This isn't coming back. So in the short term, you are looking at massive increases in energy prices over the course of the summer. I would be shocked if we stay below 170. Now, in that environment, Albertan crude is wildly competitive, but it won't last. Because in the United States, we have a populist president. Well, actually, he's our third in a row populist president. And a quirk in American energy law is that the president has the authority to, by executive decree, end oil exports from the United States. And if that happens, we're looking at a ceiling of American oil prices about 70, whereas the rest of the world then has to wrestle with Russian and American exports going offline at the same time. And I think $200 is a good number to factor in. So we get a North American energy price, and we get a global energy price. And this is kind of the sequestered energy trading system we had before World War II. We're going back to that. For Alberta, that's a bit of a disaster, because it means that all of your infrastructure is terminated into a super saturated market, and $70 is probably as good as it's going to get. So until and unless Alberta is able to get additional pipelines going somewhere else, this is just the price environment that you're going to have to suck up with for the foreseeable future.
Wow. Well, that sounded great. Wow. Okay. So that, again, now this is the problem that we've been talking about, because our government, from a federal perspective, does not want more pipelines coming out of Alberta. So there is a problem with that, even if there's opportunity.
Even if the previous government of Harper were in charge, and even if Keystone had happened, remember what happens to the crude from playthings like Keystone. It doesn't go on the international market. It goes to refineries in Texas, and the Texans would refine it. And then the refined product would go somewhere else. So in an environment where the Americans are blocking oil exports, the president does not have the authority to block oil product exports. That would require an act of Congress. That's unlikely. So Canada would still be selling into that super saturated market, and it would be the Texas refiners who have the ability to play arbitrage in the international system. So there's really no way
Peter,
that Canada could win here.
We got about 30 seconds left.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry, Peter. We got about 30 seconds left before we have to go. If you were in charge of Canada, what you've outlined going on right now, what would you do?
Russia is also the world's largest exporter of potash and of fertilizers in general. That is a space where they're in direct competition with Canada. So we're looking at a global fertilizer shortage, and there's no country that will benefit more from that than Canada, because all of a sudden you have dominant market share. You can't produce enough to replace Russia, which means prices will skyrocket, both for the inputs for fertilizer, for the fertilizer itself, and for the crops on the back end, specifically wheat. Wheat has been a very unsexy product for the last 70 years, and it's about to get really exciting. And no country will benefit more than that than Canada.
There you go. And so when you look at these types of opportunities, risks, the concerns that come out there, you know, a good write-up and a good understanding of this is awesome. And I really appreciate, Peter, for you continually coming on our show and educating our audience on a regular basis. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, appreciate it, Peter.
As long as the world keeps breaking down, I'll keep talking about it.
We've been joined by Peter Zein, geopolitical analyst and reoccurring guest for our show. And this is the type of stuff that can get people nervous about their future. If you think about $200 oil, if you think about Alberta being at the impact of a potential crash from 200 down to 70, the impacts of the economics, the volatility associated with it. How do you transition to retirement and live in retirement, all this kind of situation? We've got a system. We've got a process that you can use to bulletproof your retirement. And we're going to discuss that at our upcoming seminar. Rob, why don't you tell us about that?
You're right. Lots of things to think about. Join us Tuesday, March 29th, 7 p.m. This will be live online. Go to morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
Are you wondering about the economic impact in Canada because of inflation? 30-year high numbers and so forth. We're going to talk about the real impacts of inflation and your pocketbook coming up after the break. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.